8:35. Welcome in Mark Mayfield from Professional Financial Advisors. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Tanner. Doing well. How are you?
I'm great. And how's your summer?
Good. Yeah, it hasn't felt like summer really a lot. I mean, the weather's been fairly mild around here, except for the last couple of days. It's been a little warm, but it's going to get there, it sounds like.
Next week it's going to get there.
Yeah, but I'll take it. It's been nice.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you've gotten a decent amount of golf in.
Yep. Yeah. Yep, golf and some lake time. So, yeah, it's been good.
Good, good. Let's talk PFA. I know you had mentioned that you've gotten a lot of questions lately, so we kind of have a five-question questionnaire for you here. But I'm going to add one just because it's timely. And I said on the air yesterday I was going to ask you this. So the lottery is up to $1 billion. Mm-hmm. The Powerball will be drawn again, $1 billion. And you have the option of either lump sum or annual payments.
Yeah.
Why does everybody go with the lump sum? And I figured it must be a financial reason, but yeah, I don't know what it is.
I'm guessing I haven't really looked into it. I did see a thread about this, and I actually almost did the show about that today. But the lump sum, and I'm guessing it's because of the compound interest that you can get if you take the money and get it working for you elsewhere rather than taking it installments and deferring the taxes on it over a period of time.
I mean, if somebody asked you, that's what your answer would be to take the lump sum?
Yeah.
I mean, the only thought was, you know, you hear the horror stories of people blowing through the money, even though that's an insane amount of money to blow through. I understand this is probably something that most people are not going to ever blow through, but I mean, it can happen. But is, you know, when it's a lower jackpot, that a little more normal, my thought was well, this is a safer option to take the annual because you're always going to have money then, and there's just no way to blow through it. But
just take it and run. So I think it was funny. The thread that I was reading on Twitter about it was like one of the first things they say to do is like move, change your address, delete all your social media stuff.
Your life is over in the way you lived it.
It's kind of a blessing and a curse to
right.
And then I was thinking like, what would you do with all that money? Like obviously every charity would be.
I mean, everybody would be hitting you up forever.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's I think it's like 530 some million if you right away lump sum and then it's down to 300 some after taxes. And and does Nebraska tax lottery winnings?
Yeah.
I know some states don't. So, I mean, then it takes I saw New York.
I think there's only like 12 states that don't tax.
Oh, really? Right? Okay.
I remember.
I noticed it was like 11% for like New York. I don't know what Nebraska's is, but.
Probably right around the 6.84%.
Okay. All right. So, yeah, I mean, you're only down to like $300 million by that point.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what you're going to do with that. That's nothing. Let's talk some real financial questions. I know that you said you'd been getting some questions lately, things like, you know, if you got a raise at work, but your household makes a little bit too much money to contribute towards the Roth IRA, and they somebody that really likes tax-free growth, so where should investments go after that?
Yeah, this question doesn't come up a lot, and I'll go over the phase-out limits, but it was something that came up here fairly recently, so I thought, and that's what with all these questions, different things have come up that I thought we could just talk about today. There may be people listening that have the same questions. So, first define kind of the Roth phase-out. So it's based on your marital status and then your modified adjusted gross income. Which is basically your adjusted gross income plus you add back in some of the deductions you're able to take, and that gets you your modified adjusted gross. So for single filers, if your modified adjusted gross income is less than $138,000, you can contribute to a Roth IRA the full amount. So for 2023, $6,500 if you're under 50, $7,500 if you're over. But for a single filer, if your modified adjusted gross income is over $153,000, you're not able to contribute to a Roth IRA. Married filing jointly, under $218,000, no problem. If you make over $228,000, then neither of you can contribute to a Roth. And that was the example with the people that I was meeting with is, they were over $228,000. They like that. So then it becomes a question of what other accounts are available to them. So, if you are participating in a 401k, if your employer offers either yourself or your spouse, most 401k plans right now will offer some sort of Roth provision on it. So you can contribute to the Roth 401k. The contribution limits are separate from the Roth IRA and there's no income earnings limitation. So no matter what your income is, as long as you have that option or that 401k provision, you can go ahead and contribute to that. So that'd be $22,500 for this year. If you don't have an employer-sponsored plan, most people do, but if you don't, then it goes to the backdoor Roth, which I'll go into the backdoor Roth here. It's not super complex, but it's complex enough that if this is something you think you're interested in doing, I would definitely seek professional advice, either speak with your advisor or go talk to an accountant to see if it makes sense for you to do that. A backdoor Roth is essentially just a strategy. It's a backdoor way of being able to put money into a Roth IRA if you make too much money. So it's kind of a loophole, if you will. It's totally legal. When we bring it up, people are like, "Oh, are you sure?" It's like, no, it's legal. Congress has proposed kind of eliminating the backdoor Roth. There were some heavy discussions last year, but nothing ended up getting passed. So as of right now, it's still a viable option for someone. But basically how it works is you make a non-deductible traditional IRA contribution. So there's no tax advantages when you're doing a backdoor Roth. You're just putting the money in up to the contribution limit for the year, not taking a tax deduction. And then you go ahead and convert that money over to a Roth IRA after a period of time. So the benefit there is that you didn't take any tax deduction up front, but then you're able to get money growing in the Roth completely tax-free, which is the ultimate end goal. Some things to consider when you're doing this. It may not make sense for you to do it if you already have money in a traditional IRA, so something that's already pre-tax due to the pro rata rule. So what that means is, I'll just use an example. If you have a $50,000 IRA and 10% of that IRA, so $5,000 is after tax, the other $45,000 is pre-tax, and you take a 10% or a $10,000 distribution, then 10% of the $10,000 distribution is what the after-tax amount would be. So on a $10,000 distribution, $9,000 is taxable and $1,000 is the after-tax amount. And so with that strategy and with that rule in place, if you have other IRA assets, it's going to be really hard for you to contribute, get your $7,000 over or $7,500, $6,500, whatever it is that you contributed. So that's something to consider. And again, seek, professional advice from another advisor or your CPA when you're doing that.
Maybe, excuse me, a professional financial advisor.
Yeah. They would certainly be able to help.
There's a few in there.
And then lastly, one other option would be, it's not necessarily an investment vehicle or a retirement account by any means, but a health savings account is something that we push a lot of. If you're able to contribute to one, so in order to contribute to one, you have to be part of a high deductible health plan. But what an HSA allows you to do is it's kind of a three-pronged tax advantaged account. You defer money into the account pre-tax. The money is then invested in the account. It grows completely tax deferred, so you don't pay any taxes on the money, on the interest earned. And then as long as it's used for a qualified health expense, then the money's completely tax-free. So you essentially could put money into an HSA and never pay taxes on it ever. And so that would be an option. We encourage people who do have an HSA, fully fund it if you can on a yearly basis. For 2023, for a joint or for a married filing jointly, you can do $7,750. But we also encourage them, it's not a bad idea to save that money, plug it away, but don't, if you can pay for your co-insurance, your co-pays, your prescription drugs, all that stuff out of pocket and still fund your HSA, let that money grow completely tax deferred and hopefully tax free in the HSA for as long as possible. One advantage to an HSA is that those funds can roll over year after year. Right. So if you're if you have an FSA, the flexible savings account, if you don't spend what's in that account by year end, some plans will have like a 30 to 60 day grace period. But otherwise, you lose that money that's been put into that account. And HSA rolls over year after year. And again, it has the tax-free benefits. So that would be kind of the third option there. And then if none of that, then you're kind of just stuck with using funding a joint brokerage account, a non-qualified account, a non-retirement account, where you're then subject to capital gains tax.
Mark Mayfield here with Professional Financial Advisors, talking with us here on Husker Radio's KODY. Another question, obviously, and the word recession seems to be a buzzword that pops up maybe more often now than it had been. And so folks are asking if they should quit contributing to a 401k because of that. Is that something you'd recommend?
The short answer is no. Recession is, like you had said, I mean, recession's been thrown around here for the last 12 months at least or longer. It seems like that it just keeps kind of getting kicked down the road. So now, you know, some people were thinking recession this year. Now it's maybe being forecasted for some time next year. The Fed's trying to do the soft landing so, you know, we don't maybe ever qualify for a recession. But there's still concerns about it. There's enough news on or recession fears. But the short answer is whether or not you should stop contributing would be no. Very few instances in which you should not contribute to a 401k. Some of those are, you know, if you are just starting out or even if you're older and you don't have an emergency fund set up, maybe defer, saving to a 401k and get your emergency savings built up first, then start contributing. If you have a significant amount of bad debt, so that to us would be, you know, debt that you're paying a significant interest rate on, so mostly credit card debt, 15 to 20%. If you have a significant amount of that, you know, maybe funding your 401k and defer those payments to pay down some of that debt. And then the third option, which this isn't really common, but if there's no employer match offered on a 401k, most of the time there is because employers are offering a 401k as some sort of incentive to get you to stay there and to reward you. But if there's no employer match, then you can make the argument that you may not need to necessarily save in the 401k, but you should still be saving for retirement purposes. So, but just because of recession fears, that shouldn't stop you from contributing to the plan. You know, when markets decline or go through periods of volatility like they have here within the last year or so, it's very easy for emotions to take over. Dave Ramsey always says that 80% of personal finance is behavior. The other 20% is knowledge. And so that is really impactful. And we see that a lot when markets are going strong. You know, there's never really a lot of concerns about it. But once there's any sort of drawdown in the market, it causes people to really want to make emotional decisions. And then our job kind of almost becomes a handholding of, you know, don't do this. Everything's going to be okay. This isn't the first time we've seen it. Probably not going to be the last time you're going to see it. And so just kind of educating them through the downside of or the drawbacks of making that decision. So if we look at, I just was curious on this. So I went and looked at the 2008 financial crisis, which is the most notable one that people talk about. If investors would have continued to dollar cost average during 2008, dollar cost average is just making periodic investments or systematic contributions to their retirement plan, it would have taken just over 12 months from the very bottom of the 2008 crisis for you to break even. So, and that mostly is because you're continuing to put money in as the market's going down. So you're buying a larger quantity of shares of whatever you're buying at a cheaper rate, with the idea that those ultimately, when the market recovers, you're investing in things that will recover with the market, hence like index funds, mutual funds, and those are what you're using in 401k plans. On the flip side, we also, I hear a lot of people say, you know, in 08, during periods of times like now, they refer back to 08 and they say, I lost $20,000, I lost $50,000. Well, you only actually lost that money if you made an emotional decision to sell out of whatever it was you owned. Up until that point, it's basically just a paper loss. You still own the exact same number of shares that you did when the market dropped. But by selling out of that, you're now realizing those losses permanently. And then if you sit on that cash, you pull the money out of the market and you don't get back into the market, you're really behind the eight ball. So, you know, if you look at what the markets have done since 08, 09, anyone who pulled out, I can't imagine they're not kicking themselves for, you know, just staying the course. And so right now, we've hit on this a lot, but that's just kind of what we do is, you know, having a plan, a reason for why you're investing the way you do. So if you're someone that's 5 to 7 years out from retirement, you know, you should have a plan in place of how are you allocating your assets. You should have some set aside conservative based on when are you going to need the money, how much money are you going to need. And having a plan like that really alleviates kind of the concerns around a recession and whether or not you should continue to contribute.
Mark Mayfield with Professional Financial Advisors joining us here on Husker Radio. We've got a couple more questions. We'll take a quick time out, though, and we'll come back with more with PFA after this on Husker Radio's KODY. 8:53 on Husker Radio's Mugs in the Morning, KODY, 1240 AM, 106.1 FM on your Wednesday, July 19th. Professional Financial Advisors in for their monthly check-in here. We're talking with Mark Mayfield from PFA. What about kids are going back to college here in about a month. School starts for high school and lowered less than that. So even if you don't have a college kid, people might be thinking, oh yeah, this is my annual reminder to probably should start figuring out how to save for college for kids.
Yeah, I think besides a mortgage, college is probably becoming one of the biggest expenses for households in today's world. I actually was looking it up for the 2022-2023 school year, the average at an in-state tuition rate for a four-year university was $27,940, and at a private school is $57,570. That includes your tuition, room and board, books, and some of the other things that go along with it. But
so you're looking at least at least $100,000.
Yeah, pretty close. I mean, and it's going up by
It's not going to go down.
Yeah, what I was seeing it was showing that it's basically gone up by 5% here recently. I would argue that in certain places it's gone up by more, but the average has gone up by about 5% every year. So it's certainly becoming something that people are starting to plan for earlier. A lot of grandparents are starting to plan for the grandkids or parents themselves upon the birth of a child. You know, they get so many toys and things like that that now when they get some money for birthdays or different things like that, they're oftentimes wanting to start saving for college. And so one of the things we get, I guess a question we get is, you know, what is the best vehicle out there? There are a handful of different options. I'll just cover a couple of them today. But one of the most common one that we see, if you're wanting to save for education purposes only, the 529 plan in the state of Nebraska, it's the NEST 529.
Yeah.
That's probably the most popular tax advantage vehicle out there. Contributions are tax deferred, so you get a state tax deduction when you make money or when you make a contribution to the plan, as long as you're the owner of that account. And then distributions, so contributions are invested in the account. They have various in the NEST plan. They have various options. There's an age-based option, which is very similar to like a target date fund in your 401k plan. It'll say if you're 0 to 2 for a child who's 0 to 2 years old, it'll be really aggressive because they don't need that money for 16 years, roughly. And then the closer you get to the age of 18, the closer you get to graduating and actually needing the money, the account naturally will get more conservative. You can also get, they have a lot of Vanguard and different index funds within the plan. But that money grows completely tax deferred. And then the interest and what you put in is completely tax-free so long as it goes towards qualified expenses. So that would be books, computers, you can pay for Wi-Fi. There's numerous different things that you can use the NEST money for in college. One holdback or drawback to the NEST plan for many years was the fact that if you set it up for a child and they didn't go to college, then you either have to transfer the account to another beneficiary, maybe their sibling is going to college, or if you take the money out, then you're and it's a non-qualified expense, you're subject to tax and a 10% penalty on just the interest in the account. So that was one of the main holdbacks, was if you're setting this up for a kid who's 2, who knows if they're going to go to college. The Secure Act 2.0 passed last year, changed that. So now as long as a NEST or a 529 plan is open for 15 years, any unused funds can then be moved over to a Roth IRA.
Okay.
In the Roth IRA has to be in the name of that beneficiary. So that's kind of alleviated the concerns around the 529 plan and has made it a better option in the event that a kid does not go to college.
Ah, okay. I don't think I knew that one. So that certainly, yeah, because in this day and age, it's hard to predict.
Yeah.
You know, there was a big push for a long time. Every kid needs to go to college. And now there's maybe the push that, you know, you don't all have to go to college. There's a lot of jobs that aren't going to require it. And so, who knows where we'll be in 15 years, but that certainly can alleviate that. Well, we don't have a lot of time left. Obviously, these are complex issues. These are complex. Sometimes people don't even want to think about them because they don't want to. And maybe that pushes it further down the road in their life. And that maybe doesn't come too late, but maybe it becomes a little bit tougher to save what you need to save for retirement and for college. So get on it earlier.
Yeah,
is probably the biggest thing.
Yep. Have a plan. You're never too young to have a plan. Always have a purpose for what you're doing, and be thinking long term. You know, you always want to be financially independent. If you're a millennial, 20 to 40 years is when you want to be financially independent. So have a plan of how you're going to get to that and start saving and planning for that now, so that there's not a huge crunch when you're in your 50s and 60s and now you're wanting to retire.
And if you need help, PFA is there. Professional financial advisors, Mark Burkmeister and Mark Mayfield. How can they get in touch with you guys?
Yeah, they can call our office 308-534-8210 or visit our website, pfaretire.com.
You're right there in the Nebraskaland building as well?
Yep, the main Nebraskaland Bank building on the third floor.
Very good. Well, you enjoy the rest of your day.
Yeah, same
and thanks for stopping by. Professional Financial Advisors, appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you.